views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Let's talk about your juicy love with me, Luna Drake. We explore relationships, dating, sacred union, communication, conscious love, healthy boundaries, and much more. As a dating and relationship coach for over 5 years, with a background in shamanic healing and metaphysical work, I've helped men and women, young and old, from all walks of life. My mission is to increase peace, joy, and love on planet Earth. So listen in and stay juicy. All right. Thank you so much for listening in today. Of course, I'm Una Drake, and with me today is Susanna Matthews. Susanna, thank you.
Hi, Una. Yes, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. I'm excited to talk with you because you are a dating and relationship expert, and you've written a book called Revising Mrs. Robinson, Navigating Cougar Cub Relationships, which I think is a fascinating topic and one a lot of people aren't willing to necessarily talk about. So I can't wait to hear more about your work. Do you want to say a few things about yourself?
Well, sure. So a lot of people will ask me, how long have you been doing this as a dating coach and matchmaker? And I kind of jokingly say I've been meddling in people's love lives for over 20 years, doing so professionally for over 7. So I think I've kind of always had the tendency and really the passion to focus on what's going on in terms of gender communications and masculine and feminine dynamics and just really understanding, why are we attracted to who we're attracted to? Why does it wax? Why does it wane? And so, I never really expected to be researching this topic, but I am so glad that it landed in my lap.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll get into some of the specifics about the cougar cub relationships a little bit later, I think, in the interview. But I want to talk about in this episode, I want to cover the overall topic of dating for women over 50. I know, especially as women approach that kind of 50-year age mark, some of the dynamics in the dating environment really change for women. Maybe even you could say in the older, upper 40s. But, it's a different ballgame. A lot of women in their 50s, their kids are grown. They're not looking, having more kids is not even an option. And it's just, it's a different ball game as far as dating and relationships go. And can you, I know you've worked with people and you obviously continue to work with people all over North America, from men and women of all ages. But I noticed on your site that you do have a program specifically, or some training specifically for older, daters, people on the older end. And what can you tell us about that, especially for women in particular?
Well, I agree with you, Una, that there are some differences. And when I say differences, don't interpret good or bad, just differences are what they are. But I do hear from women about a couple of different sort of key issues or concerns. For example, I was just talking with a woman about a week, 2 weeks ago, for whom her health issues that she's developed in kind of this particular chapter of her life prevent her from doing some of the activities that she might enjoy doing, or that a potential date might enjoy doing, and she feels a little uncertain and maybe extra self-aware or extra sensitive about, well, I probably am not going to be all that appealing to someone because I can't do X, Y, and Z, or I can't go here, or I can't be out in the heat or whatever. And so I think it's important, that is just part and parcel of aging. We all are going to have some of those issues that we're faced with.
Absolutely. I've worked with a lot of men who are in the same boat,
Yes. Yeah.
An injury or something happens and suddenly you have to be a little bit more careful,
And so if you're dating within that age group that you are a part of, chances are that your audience will be aware and sensitive to those things. And I think that there's a way to balance that message of, I have XYZ syndrome, or I need to be home by 9, or, you know, whatever that is, to balance that with the message, but I'm still fun loving and I'm social and I love to go out and try new things and meet new people. And this is the rich, amazing lifestyle that I lead. And this issue doesn't slow me down. I think that's the underlying message that I really want to see those women and men embrace.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think for, you know, women who maybe have already raised their kids, or, you know, maybe kids were never a part of their plan in the first place, you know, they have more freedom in their life a lot of times in multiple areas of their life once they reach, you know, 50s, 60s, and beyond. I mean, they might even be retired, or they just have more maybe financial ability to do what they want, and just more freedom in a lot of areas to pursue their passion. So I think that's a real positive. And a lot of people at that age know themselves. I actually really love working with women and men in their, you know, 50s and 60s and beyond, because they have that life experience and the knowledge of themselves that often they know what they want, and they know themselves much more so than I think people in the younger age brackets. Yeah. Do you find the same thing?
100% that is true. And I think particularly a lot of women in a post-divorce phase of their lives have taken the time to really ask those hard questions or those challenging questions about who am I and what do I want and what do I see as the vision for this next chapter. I've also heard from a lot of women in their 50s and 60s, Una, who say, you know, I have fantastic grandkids and I love spending time with them, or I love hanging out with my adult children. It would take a really amazing man to distract me from that. They're just living a great life with fewer pressures, fewer stresses, as you said, more economic independence. And so it really would take an over the top, just exceptional man to come along and maybe steal them away for a date night instead of babysitting the grandkids that night.
Yeah, absolutely. So, let's segue into the cougar cub relationships then, because that's fascinating. So, first of all, how did you come about to writing this book? I mean,
the most indirect way possible. So I've been interested in topics relating to sex and culture and gender roles and culture since the 90s, really since college. But this particular topic, which I see as sitting at the intersection of ageism and sexism, so those prejudices or beliefs, stereotypes that we have about what aging and sexuality means, or about what how women should behave, I really see the sort of cougar cub phenomenon sitting at that intersection. And it wasn't until I was single for a brief period about 7 years ago, and a lot of younger men kind of seemed to be taking notice, and it really, really surprised me. I had taught college, and then I had, I'm not sure how, but a lot of 20-something men were kind of coming into my orbit, you might say. And I felt a little bit of an internal discord about that, or sort of misalignment about that. And so on the one hand, I was this really confident, progressive, strong, educated woman who was having this kind of, oh, whoa, you know, or almost like being a little off, put off at myself that was happening. And so then I had to say to myself, what's that resistance about? And is that really coming from your own values and your own belief system? Or is that external? Is that coming from the peanut gallery of your life? And so do I want to pay attention to that or not? Do I want to maybe give myself the green light to explore that kind of relationship or not? So that was kind of the work I had to do within myself. And after that, whenever I don't know the answer to something, Una, my initial response is to just dive into the literature. What can I read about this? Who else has experienced this? And what have they written? So I got into the social science research around aging and sexuality and gender roles. And then I also did a lot of interviews with women around North America who had been in these kinds of age gap relationships.
Wow. Okay, that is fascinating. And thank you for doing this. That is so great.
If it's okay, I might just add, I had found that a lot of what was written was very, what I call sensationalized, shallow empowerment. You go, girl, do what you want, get yours. You know, it was very, there wasn't much depth to that in my mind. And so I wanted to write something for women who were mindful and conscientious and that they could actually kind of rest their argument. We all make emotional decisions, of course, but some of us like to think we're making rational, logical decisions. So at least give them the building blocks for how do I make decisions about who I'm going to be with at any age or any stage.
Absolutely. And I just think, I mean, I know that I'm sure it took a lot of courage for you to do that internal work and examine. I mean, basically, that's kind of examining prejudices, basically, internally.
It really is. Yeah. And there are so many that I think that are just such part and parcel of our culture that we tend to internalize them without even thinking about this. And these are prejudices about race and about gender and about sexual orientation. And they're just so much a part of the fabric of our society. We adopt them hook, line, and sinker without even gut checking ourselves.
Absolutely. And that can be really hard and really hard to see, especially around something as personal mm-hmm. as dating and relationships and love and intimacy and sex, you know, like exciting. I mean, a lot of times I think that those can be some of the hardest things to check our own internal kind of biases about. So thank you for doing that work.
Well, you're welcome.
and also, as we were talking about this, I think that women have this idea, I think from Cinderella, you know, or kind of fairy tales, and there's an idea of the whole kind of archetype of dating and relationships where the woman, oftentimes the female in the relationship is kind of the damsel, needs to be taken care of, wants to look up to her, you know, brave, you know, strong,
heroic
partner. Mm-hmm. However, especially in a cougar cub relationship, the female is the kind of the more dominant kind of in charge role. Would you say that that's true? At least I'm not an expert in this.
Yeah. So that is sometimes the case, but I did find from the interviews that it was not always the case.
Okay.
So yeah, I think oftentimes when people hear the term cougar, and by the way, there's a whole lot of, you know, agitation around that we can talk about what that word means. But I think that they tend to think that perhaps it was the woman who pursued the relationship with the younger man. And almost 9 times out of 10, I found it was the opposite. The younger man chased her. And so that was one of the things that the women really wanted to say right up front was, listen, I wasn't trying to conquer anybody. The word cougar feels predatory and I resist that. He came after me and I turned him down and he still came after me and I tried to swat him away and he still came after me. And if it hadn't been for his persistence, this wouldn't have happened.
Wow. Well, that's wonderful. I mean, that's nice to hear, you know, because a lot of times I think we can sometimes have preconceived notions that, you know, younger men only want to date younger women,
right.
But obviously that's not true. And I mean, I personally know people that have age gap relationships where mm-hmm. it's, you know, a younger man, they're very happy.
Mm-hmm.
So one question, I know you talked about men in their 20s, but what about men like in their 30s?
Sure.
Do you see that happening very much or?
It certainly is.
First question.
Yeah. I think honestly that, I mean, what I looked at was an age gap of 10 years or more. So hypothetically you could have a 40-year-old man and a 50 or 55-year-old woman and wonder about, hey, is this age gap too big for us to close or can this be a relationship that works? And so often it doesn't have to do with the age that's on your driver's license. It just sort of has to do with where you're at in life and what your needs and wants are in that stage and what your goals are. So a deal breaker would obviously be something like maybe a 30-year-old man who wants marriage and family, who wants to have biological children. And if he's dating a 45 or 50 year old woman who has been there, done that, and the factory's closed, then, you know, they're really going to have to say, okay, either we're going to have maybe a very temporary relationship, which could be rich and fulfilling, yet short-lived, because longevity isn't the only measure of relationship success, or we're going to just have to make the painful choice maybe not to pursue this because he has some very clear goals for himself and she's not willing or able to meet those needs. And so they just kind of have to make the grown-up decision to go separate ways.
Right. Yeah. And either of those choices can be the right one. And there are, I think, significant numbers of young men who don't want biological children, you know, yeah, who maybe don't want to raise children at all. Mm-hmm. And so did you come across that at all? Or what kind of longevity did you see with the people that you talk to or relationships that you see with the clients that you work with, et cetera?
I would say that the minority of the people who I interviewed were still in that age gap relationship. For most, it could probably be described as a, hopefully this term doesn't offend anyone, a palate cleanser relationship, or a relationship which simply is sort of helping the woman to maybe build a bridge from an old life to a new life, or a recently ended relationship with maybe a same aged partner or similarly aged partner to whatever freedom and opportunities lay ahead for her. Right. So again, I didn't necessarily dismiss the relationships as being insignificant or anything less than love or, you know, anything less than transformative, because for many of these women, even if it was a matter of weeks or months or only a few years, it was a meaningful relationship. And relationships at any age, Una, they reflect back to us who we are. They help us define who we are. They give us a tool or a means of expressing who we are. And so simply finding anyone to connect with on that level is pretty darn lucky.
I agree. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that this could be really good for the men involved as well. I mean, because one of the things that I know you mentioned in your book is that, you know, women are more experienced. And so if the younger man is getting together with an older woman, then he can learn and benefit from all the experience that she has so that he can become a more confident, experienced lover to whoever he ends up with in the future. You know, even if it is a short-lived relationship with the cougar cub type scenario.
You make a very good point, and I did not get to interview as many men as I had hoped, but those who I did interview consistently made the comment that they felt that women their own age were very racked by insecurity. They weren't yet maybe as mature as the older women or as confident. They didn't have their lives together. And of course, the same could probably be said of many younger men as well. But this is what the younger men were saying, was that they really valued the sophistication and the wisdom and just sort of the total package that those older women brought to the table.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever find yourself, I mean, would you ever like try to convince a woman in her 50s or 60s or, you know, to pursue a relationship with a younger man? Or do you feel like if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah. So for most women, or men, either one, if I'm sitting down with someone and we're beginning to work together in a coaching and client capacity, one of the questions that I will ask them is, what has been your ideal dating age range? So if a 40-year-old woman says, oh, 40 to 45 or 40 to 50, I might say to her, okay, tell me a little bit about how you arrived at that. And she may or may not know how she arrived at that. She may have reasons, or they may be falsely based, limiting belief kind of reasons, or they might be valid reasons. But I may say to her, I'm going to encourage you or invite you to open up your dating age range to at least 5 years younger, if she's a very vivacious and attractive and outgoing woman, I might say, why don't you at least humor me and go 10 years younger to 10 years older, simply to give you more options. And you know what? I'm never going to make you go on a date with someone you don't want to go on a date with. But if at least online or on an app, you're setting those parameters to minus 10 or plus 10, you're just going to have more fish you're going to catch in your net. And then if you want to throw them back, throw them back.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. Totally agree. So it looks like we're going to have to go on break pretty soon, but we just have a few more minutes here. So being able to pursue these younger relationships, I would say, is an advantage for the older dater, so to speak. The woman in her, 40s, 50s, 60s, she has that option.
She does. And most of the women I interviewed said to me, they said, Susanna, my ex-husband is dating a woman 20 years younger, 25 years younger, 10, whatever. And so they said, if all these men have the option, why can't I have the option? And so really, it wasn't even, again, that they were trying to make any sort of social statement or express feminism or any way, but they did just see, there's a term for this, female hypergamy is the sociological term for the expectation that we have that it's okay for women to date older men who are maybe more achieved and successful in their careers, more socioeconomically advantaged, but it's not okay for women to date down in that way. They can date up, but not down. And so when I told them, hey, there's a word for this, and sometimes just having words to express the things that are frustrating or unfair can be helpful, they all went, oh, I didn't know that. That's so interesting.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to break, and we'll get more into some of these issues when we come right back. So thank you. You're listening to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake. My guest today is Susanna Matthews, author of Revising Mrs. Robinson, Exploring or Navigating Cougar Cub Relationships. So thank you so much. We'll be right back.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher Sarah Luce brings her unique style to the hit show Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit SarahLuce.com. That's SarahLuoS.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
If you're dealing with fear and anxiety, you've probably noticed that the more you fight these emotions, the stronger they seem to get. Dr. Friedemann Schaub, the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution, explains that instead of suppressing, we need to identify and resolve the deeper, subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety. His personal breakthrough program has helped thousands worldwide to overcome their emotional challenges. To learn more, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com and schedule your free consultation with Dr. Schaub now.
Choose the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
All right, we're back. I'm Una Drake. You're listening to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake. And today, my guest is Susanna Matthews, the author of Revising Mrs. Robinson, Navigating Cougar Cub Relationships. And we're talking about those relationships. Before we went on break, we were covering some of the upsides, some of the advantages to these relationships, whether they're short-lived or long-lived. And now let's get into some of the downsides. Susanna, you know, you mentioned that there are some downsides that can come up. Can you go into those a little bit?
Sure. So, and just to preface, my view on downsides is that every negative is a potential learning opportunity. So I don't see any of these as necessarily the rule you should use to live your life by, or this is a reason why you can't have this kind of relationship. It's just something to be aware of and then create a plan or a strategy for how to mitigate that negative or that challenge. So one of the things that I found in my, I did a little research into sort of how the female brain works and the neuroscience. And while that's not my background, I found it fascinating because I read a lot of research that talked about how the female brain is really designed to play it safe and to not take as many risks. And the female brain, because it has this protecting and self-preserving mechanism, our brains tend to be hyper-analytical about relationships and the risks that might be associated with them. So if you take this relationship opportunity between an older woman and a younger man, well, that can just be rife with perceived or imagined threats and risks. It could be the risk of losing him to someone younger, or the risk of, am I good enough in bed, or am I going to be, you know, are we going to have the legs to make this last. So we tend to kind of scrutinize those relationships, and particularly when we have dating apps and online dating and we have these little bits and pieces of data. And so I find that sometimes we women are taking just fragments of data and making decisions using really incomplete data sets. So the opportunity there is collect more information, keep an open mind, keep an open heart, get to know him beyond his age. So he says he's 27 and his profile's cute, but you think you have to swipe left because that's too young. Just pause and say, okay, well, what else would be important to me about this person? What if he were 37 or 47 or 57? What else am I really looking for instead of just giving it the knee-jerk swipe left with that one piece of data? One of the other downsides that I heard from several women, and I walked this myself, was a heightened sense of body consciousness. So, you know, all of us are journeying towards the same destination. and, you know, wrinkles and cellulite and gray hairs. I mean, it's just a reality of aging. But we live in the age of the Instagram star, right? Where they have been carefully pictured and filtered and images are curated to show a very youth-obsessed, body-obsessed, sexuality-obsessed lifestyle. And so not getting too much in our heads about how do I look with the lights on and mostly undressed and, oh my gosh, he's in such great shape and, you know, just sort of looking at oneself through a little bit more of a scrutinous eye with some of the women experienced that. And yet others found sexier than they felt sexier than they ever had felt in their lives. So they had there were completely opposite reactions, just depending on the women.
That's very interesting, but I can imagine. I can imagine.
Yeah.
But it seems like it could potentially be a very empowering experience, you know, to be desired, you know, to mm-hmm. be, you know, lusted after by someone who's so, you know, comparatively young and, you know,
right.
maybe has a great body or whatever. And to realize that he's getting a good deal too.
Yeah. It's a win both ways. Well, and so many middle-aged women have said to me, and women over 50 in particular, that they want to live life. They are not ready to just sort of recline in the Barco lounger and flip through 247 television stations and, you know, just sort of take it easy and lounge for the next 10 or 20 or 30 years. They want to get out and go dancing. They want to go to wine tastings and beer samplings and cooking classes and ice skating and skiing. I mean, they just really want to live a juicy life, which I know you advocate for. So sometimes these younger men are a better fit in terms of lifestyle because they want the same thing. And so many of these women mentioned having dated someone who just, well, he was ready to retire and he was tired and he was no longer interested in activities in the bedroom or leaving the house.
Yeah, absolutely. I've worked with clients like that as well, who, you know, are very energetic women who have maybe done yoga for like 20 years or more and, you know, are in great shape, you know, have the bodies and the physiques of that women 10 years younger than them would envy. Mm-hmm. And it's just not a good fit for them. You know, there's just only a very select number of men, say their own age, who can really keep up with them physically.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And just in daily life.
So
I think that, like what you're saying, you know, partnering with a younger man could be a really good match.
Absolutely.
One
of the other challenges, just real quickly, that did arise was sometimes these women had a lot on the line with their families and their friends and their coworkers. Some of them reported losing the respect of some of those people in their world because those people who were close to them didn't understand the motive for the relationship or they didn't trust it. Others had family and friends and coworkers who were very accepting. So there were a wide range of narratives around that, but I particularly, my heart really broke for the women who felt like they either had to be very secretive or very discreet about their younger partners, or just not, I can't take him home for Thanksgiving. I can't bring him home for Christmas. Or the first time I did, my uncle made fun of us. Or, you know, they just had to be ready to kind of navigate a family dynamic that if one of them was bringing home a same aged partner, they simply wouldn't have had to navigate. So
sure.
I do try to coach couples to think ahead about how you want to broach the subject and prepare your friends and family and how you will handle negativity when you face it, because at some point you might face it.
Right. Yeah. Because we talked about in the first half of the show how sometimes for women to even consider this type of relationship, they have to examine their own internal prejudices and their own internal, the conditioning that they've had since childhood around what kind of relationship they should be in and mm-hmm. what that should look like. But I think dealing with the expectations and you could say prejudices of family and friends, coworkers, et cetera, is a whole even different dimension of that. So how do you recommend that people tackle that? How do you move forward?
Yeah. So, you know, the older I get, Una, the easier it is for me to be really blunt in my life and just be very straightforward. And I find that the same is true of a lot of middle-aged women as well, that they just say, well, this is my partner for now. This is who I'm dating and I love him to pieces and we're going to be showing up for 4th of July. So, you know, they're just very unapologetic. Other times we'll kind of script through how maybe the man can be an advocate and give some strength. So, you know, if anyone's feeling judgmental or pitying of the older woman, he might say something like, I pity anyone who would underestimate her. She is wonderful and she's intelligent and beautiful and amazing. And I recognize that. I don't know why you wouldn't as well. But, you know, sort of having some things that are sort of prepared in advance that both members of the couple are comfortable with that aren't going to cause confrontation or a big blow up at the family picnic or whatever, but also are going to let people know up front and early on, we're not going to tolerate any gossip or snarky comments or disrespect.
That's great. I love it. Okay. Wonderful. So what kind of, do you find that women who, you know, have this kind of relationship, you know, a cougar cub relationship, do you find that they often go through is it sometimes like a sexual reawakening for them? I mean, can you talk a little bit about that?
That might be fair to say. Yeah. So I at first wondered how much can I or should I talk about sex here? And I think I was really wary of the assumption that people would have that sex was the only thing that the couple had in common, or that it was the only thing that drew them together. And usually the sex was pretty hot, but it was not the only thing that they shared most of the time. I was probably a little more less interested in their actual day-to-day practices and more interested in why we have the knee-jerk reaction to she's not a sexually appropriate partner for him or he's not a sexually appropriate partner for her. So one thing that I found interesting, I kind of got into some of the literature from evolutionary anthropology and evolutionary psychology, and I realized that, all the cues that we associate with sexuality, which are really the things that are associated with reproduction. So high, round, firm breasts and round hips and shiny, lustrous hair and white eyes and, you know, all these sort of youth cues, if you will, that those are the things that somewhere in the back of our little brains, we say, This represents fertility, and that's a positive. That's a thumbs up for sexuality, and therefore, you know, you can pass go. You get to be a sexual person is how we respond to the person with those particular physical assets. And when we see an individual that lacks those physical assets, or we see those assets in a deteriorated state, then that little part of our brains that's probably really concerned with survival and procreation says, oh, no, that doesn't work, right? Because that's not advantageous for the human race. But we live in a time where we are not in danger of dying off. So I think we can just tell that part of our brains to chill out and calm down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And do you think that's more important for the women to kind of keep in mind, or the men in this scenario, or both? I mean,
I think it's helpful for both to keep in mind. I think it's helpful for the men in the scenario to understand that if his older female partner is having resistance, or, you know, I talk to men where they'd say, she keeps breaking up with me and I don't really think she wants to. I really think she wants to be with me, but she keeps breaking up with me. It's like she feels she has to. And she'll throw up, basically the women will self-sabotage, long story short. And the men will say, what's this about? I think if he can understand what it's about and understand that it may be about ageism and sexism and how that's internalized, then he doesn't have to take it as personally and be as hurt and wounded that she keeps trying to end the relationship or tell him why it won't work or whatever. If he understands as women, there is a lot working against our successful aging in this culture. I mean, we can just get into a whole media analysis here. There is a lot pushing against us in having what I'm going to call healthy aging experiences. And so to maybe inform him of some of that so he can see the bigger picture of where her fears and frustrations are born of.
Wow. Yeah, that's powerful. I love just, are there some practical, like, I don't know, conversation starters or, you know, like how do, I mean, yes, that's like the broad picture.
Yeah,
I get
yeah.
it. But like, how do we, like, how would you work with people who are like actively involved with this, you know,
yeah.
actively dealing with these issues? Like how, where do you go? You know,
Yeah. So a good stretch. So I would run any client through just kind of a basic, diagnostic about their love life and their social life and their relationship life. But then getting into the book, we would kind of work through chapter by chapter. And there is a section in there called Mantras for Conscious Cougars. And so these are kind of self-affirmations that she can use, or you know, he can use them as well, to sort of, fortify the mindset. I think mindset is so key in anything we try to tackle in life, whether it's business, whether it is pursuing an education, whether it's pursuing a relationship. Having a strong and healthy mindset that serves our best interests is really the foundation that we have to lay for any new endeavor. So I would work with that couple on really developing that kind of mindset.
That sounds very positive.
There's also a conversation to be had. I mean, kind of going back to that, what I was talking about our biases and our assumptions and sexual cues and so forth. You know, scientists have kind of informed us here in recent years that there is, we have biological age and we have chronological age. And I don't know if you're kind of keyed into those terms or not, but our physical functionality is really how we define biological age. So whether we're sick or healthy, whether we get the right amount of sleep and good nutrition and good exercise and kind of all those things that go into making us healthy and giving us longevity, those are the things that that we can measure that biological age by. So you could have a 30-year-old who maybe has the functionality of a 50-year-old or 60-year-old. You could have a 50-year-old, like the women you were talking about that are so healthy and fit, they have a biological age of 35. Chronological age, that's the age according to your birth certificate.
Sure.
That's when you came into this world. So there's this famous quote by Satchel Paige, the baseball player, "How old would you be if you didn't know how old you were?" And to me, that just is golden because it really says, all right, well, your chronological age is 46, sister, but how old is your biological age? And that's determined by your body and your spirit and your emotions and your mind and all the other things that make you you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I imagine that, I mean, and I think sex is a big part, and sexuality is a big part of how old we feel a lot of times.
It is.
You know, I'm just thinking of some women that I've worked with who have, say, you know, come out of long-term marriages that were not very satisfactory, where they were not, where they needed some good intimacy, like positive intimacy, where it had been like a really, really long time. And I think that having like good, positive, healthy sex can really help with that, you know?
And absolutely. And we know that healthy sex helps to regulate our sort of nervous system and make us a little more mindfully able to manage our emotions. We know science has proven that. We know that it makes us more productive. We tend to get more things done when we're having an orgasm once in a while and
right.
some bonding and some connection. So, you know, I think that there's something to be said for being really sexually healthy at all ages.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I'm just thinking, tying this back to the overall theme, I know of this episode, which is, you know, dating without limits for women over 50. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, getting in touch or back in touch with sexuality, for, especially for those who maybe have been a little disconnected there, you know, that can be really, really important. And, and it's okay if you, you know, to maybe go to untraditional sources if that's something that works, you know, for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And also one thing that I have, I've heard from men of all ages, but especially men in the, I'm going to say 50s, 60s, you know, for many of those men, they do want like a really close, intimate relationship with a woman. And sometimes women can get kind of shut down sometimes. I know this is a very broad general statement, but
right.
I think sometimes just being able to open up sexually and become more comfortable with sexuality is really, really important. And so, like you were saying, even if a cougar cub relationship is just a palate cleanser, it doesn't mean that it's insignificant. It doesn't mean that it's something to be, poo-pooed or mocked or anything like that.
Right.
Extremely important. And it can be important even if a woman in her 50s or 60s eventually wants to be with a man more long-term, a man closer to her own age. She may need that kind of intermittent relationship in order to open up to everything that she can be and to have that comfort with intimacy that will lead her to the next step of a relationship that's more along the lines of what maybe she has in her mind.
I agree. And, you know, Gail Sheehy has done some wonderful research and writing about the very thing you're talking about. She's, you know, one of the kind of pioneers of writing about sexuality and aging. And so if you and your listeners are not yet familiar, that would be a good resource. I have a feeling that there are probably some people listening who are saying, okay, this is all good and well, but I just can't wrap my head around this whole cougar label. Like, I don't feel like a cougar. I don't like that word. I might be persuaded to date a younger man, but I can't be called cougar. Like, that just doesn't sit with me. So if it's okay, I want to kind of address that term.
Yeah, please do.
Because I know that there are some women that just really chafe against it, and I respect that. So I just thought long and hard when putting a title to my book about whether or not to even use the term cougar on the front. And I knew that there might be people that got the wrong impression about what the book was about because of that term. But ultimately, I decided to use it, and it was purely a marketing and SEO-driven choice. I knew that if people were challenged with this kind of relationship, or they had the opportunity and they were trying to talk themselves out of it, the terms that they would probably Google would be things like cougar and maybe older woman, younger man. And so I really wanted to make the book be something that could be found. And if your book can't be discovered, no one can read it, and then it can't be helped. So that's what drove me to that. But I wanted to really let women know that I use a variety of terms throughout, cougar, sometimes older woman, younger man. Obviously the title, Mrs. Robinson, that comes from the character Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate. And so there's a whole generation. I know the movie, and I don't know if the younger men who are picking up the book are familiar with the movie or not. That in and of itself was kind of an interesting crash course in Hollywood ageism and sexism. Fun fact, Anne Bancroft was only about 7 years older than Dustin Hoffman when she was cast in the role of Mrs. Robinson. That's not such a significant age gap, but by Hollywood standards at that time, 1957, I think, 67, that was. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Huh. Okay, so if people want to learn more, if they want to get your book, where can they go?
It is on Amazon. and be very happy for people to pick it up and review it, whether you love it or hate it, even if whether it's 5 stars or 1 star. I'm tough skin, I'm thick skin, so I'm happy to get any kind of feedback. And if they want to be in touch with me, they can follow me on Facebook. Susanna K. Matthews is one Facebook page. The Date Maven is my other Facebook page. Revising Mrs. Robinson is a third Facebook page. So let's be social.
All right. That sounds great. Thank you so much for being with me today. And I really appreciate your insight and your wisdom and everything that you've shared with us. So,
well, you have been so open and so gracious to have me. Thank you, Una.
Thank you. All right. Well, guys, go check her out. Get the book and leave some reviews. If you want to connect with me, my website is unadrake.com. You've been listening to Your Juicy Love with Una Drake. And thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time. All right.
You've been listening to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake. Tune in each month as Dr. Pat and I co-host together, creating juicy conversations, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. I interview amazing guests, and you'll learn how to transform your relationships so you can stay juicy. To learn more about me or to listen to past shows, visit my website at unadrake.com.